Order the House Revenue Committee meeting this morning and welcome everybody here today. We've got our agenda set out before us. Let's start at the top. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3449, and we have dash three amendments on that that replace the bill. Have those been distributed to the desks? They've not. Could we have those distributed? Do you have those?
I can't copy, but. Okay,
this is. Let's get copies for committee members. Here, I've got a set right here. Oh, you got them? Okay.
One of the other of us need them.
Good, you have the bill in front of you. There are dash three amendments that replace the bill. You've seen those, Steve? Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Are you going to tell us about the dash threes?
Well, I think.
I don't even have.
All right, I'll start with the dash threes.
Okay.
Here,
see what I can do here. I'll need help with this.
This is the time of session for winging it.
The easy part to understand is that it does deal with the local option taxes that can be excluded from school formula local revenue. It changes. Currently, the exclusion is the lesser of 10% of school formula revenue or $500 per weighted student. The bill increases that to the 10% to 15% of the school formula and the $500 per weighted student to $750 per weighted student beginning in 03-04. The other part of the bill deals with conversion of temporary tax rates for gap bonds into the permanent tax rate of a school district. And what the bill does is to keep the same statutory permanent rate for a school district when the constitutional rate can increase after paying off of a gap bond. And that would first apply to July 1 of 2005. But for the next biennium, 03-04 and 04-05, it would exclude from school formula local revenue any property taxes raised by a permanent rate increase for those 2 years, again, from paying off the gap bond.
Thank you.
And I think this will be more understandable as Portland explains their situation and how they intend to use these provisions.
All right. Well, let's do bring up Superintendent Jim Scherzinger then. Jim, welcome back to Revenue Committee. Did you want Patty with you? Or?
No, that's okay.
Okay.
I think she trusts me. I don't know.
Okay. Good morning.
Jim Scherzinger, superintendent at Portland Public Schools. As Steve explained, the Dash 3 amendments, they fundamentally do three things. But just as a bit of an explanation before that, this goes back to the way that Measure 50 was written. At the time that Measure 50 was written, there were some districts that were paying debt service levies out of their general fund. And a provision was written in Measure 50 that allowed for those debts to be repaid on top of the permanent rate of a school district, or actually of any district. And then at the time that the levy was, or that the debt was repaid, the permanent rate went up to the combination of the regular rate for operations of the entity plus the amount of the debt, the rate that was paying the debt levy. And in Portland's case, what that does is when this debt, the current gap bond, these were called gap bonds, when that gap bond is repaid, which will occur in 2 years, that the permanent rate of the district would go up from $4.77, which it currently is, up to $5.28, which would be a very high rate for a school district for the permanent rate. So the Portland taxpayers would be paying substantially more taxes than other school districts would be. I think we're already the second highest rate in Multnomah County, and this would make it by far the highest. in cases where this has occurred, and it didn't occur for this reason, it occurred for other reasons in the way that Measure 50 was written, in Bend and in Sweet Home, where the calculation produced a very high rate, what was done was that we set a statutory rate that was lower than the constitutional permanent rate. And so one of the things that this bill does is it does that. It sets a statutory rate, or at least the amendments, and that's the first part of those amendments. It sets on a permanent basis after 050 or beginning in 0506, it sets the statutory rate at the current permanent rate. So that $4.77, which currently is our permanent rate, would remain the permanent rate in perpetuity. What that would mean that is, if we wanted to ever levy more taxes than that for a local option, that we would have to do it through the local option process. So we would have to go to the voters and ask for any more taxes like that, just like a local option levy, or it would be a local option levy. So another thing that the bill does is it raises the cap on the local option so that we could ask voters under the normal rules for local option. This is important because another thing that occurred with Measure 50 and with the state school fund was that Portland was given some exceptions to the I guess what you would call the state school fund formula. One of those was called desegregation taxes, and the other was this gap bond levy. And the net effect of this bill would be that we would now, beginning in 0506, when this deseg permission currently expires and the gap bond is paid off, Portland School District would then be wholly under the state school fund formula system. It would have the whatever the state school fund formula gave us plus whatever our local option that the voters approved would do. So that as part of this, what our intention would be not to ask for any continuation of the DSEG levying authority that we currently have, and that our entire state-related system would be encompassed in the existing system for other school districts, that we would have a permanent rate, and we would have that, and all those funds would go to the state like any other school district, and we would have whatever other additional money we got would come through the local option. So that's part of the purpose of this bill. There's another provision of the bill, the last provision, which only applies to the next 2 years. And what that provision does is essentially allow us to advance refund our current debt levies. Now, the bill doesn't, we could do that under current law, so this doesn't give us permission to do it. That's something we could do. But what this bill does is it changes the current provisions of that create an exception for the gap bond and instead make an exception for that would fit the permanent rate that we would impose over the next 2 years if we refunded the bond. So it creates a provision that allows us to get some financial benefit out of the advance refunding. And the purpose of that, in our case, was to try to pay off the $18 million in accrual that the last legislative session and the special sessions allowed us to do. In other words, in our current budget, the budget for the current year, $18 million of our revenue is revenue that we're accruing from the July state school fund payment because of the provisions that the last legislative session did. And doing this advance refunding would allow us to amortize that debt and get the school district so it's not doing that accrual anymore. And I think that's something that's important to every school district in explaining their situation to auditors, is to get that accrual off the books. And I think many of you know what that issue is. So that's what the bill does. The purpose of it is to get us off of the... to take all the special provisions for Portland ultimately out of the law, get us under the normal system. Essentially, what would happen is that our permanent rate would stay the same, so it would not affect the state school fund. In fact, when the desegregation allowance goes away in 05-06, it would return $8 million, roughly $8 million a year, into the state school fund pot that currently we get an exception for. And I think we passed out a finance sheet for you to look at. So that's the purpose of it. I'd be glad to deal with any questions.
Let's kind of walk back. Boy, a lot of that was Measure 5 flashback. Yeah, there were 50 flashbacks for you and me anyway. That's.
Were you here? I didn't deal with
it. You didn't deal with Measure 50.
I dealt with it.
Yeah. So when Measure 50 went into effect, we had, Portland had, a permanent rate.
Measure 50 created a permanent rate for every district in the state.
And then on top of that, Portland had the gap bonds. What were those covering?
The gap bond was, this has a very long history. Mm-hmm. When Portland Public Schools had its own pension system, and when the PERS, at some point it was required that school districts all join the PERS system. Not sure all that was a great idea now, but the system that Portland had at the time had a large unfunded liability. And so when they entered the PERS system, PERS said, you can't come into our system unless you pay off the unfunded liability of the system you have. And so they issued a large debt in order to pay off the unfunded liability of their existing system. It was a pay-as-you-go system. And it's that debt that we are still repaying. And it's been refinanced a number of times as interest rates have dropped. But it's that's the debt we're talking about. Okay. We also have a small amount of debt that on our administration building and computer system that we would also wrap into this in order to handle the 18 to get rid of the accrual system, but that's part of our plan. But the law itself only really deals with the gap bond, because that's the only thing that the state law affects.
And it's the gap bond that raises, you said 4.77 is your permanent rate, and with the gap bond
is about 50 cents. So the gap bond is about 50 cents, and what would happen under this legislation is the 4.77 would remain our permanent rate. The 50 cents would just go away, and the only way that it would that any rate would continue would be the voters approving a local option levy, like any other local option levy.
And without this bill, your permanent rate would become?
It would go up to about 5.28.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
And that would leave you no local option authority.
Well, it would. You would still have the ability to ask for local option above that rate, if to the extent that there's room within the $5 limit.
Yeah.
And there would be obviously less room, but essentially the result would be that Portland taxpayers would pay a much higher rate than other taxpayers in other school districts.
Bye. Okay. Questions for Mr. Scherzinger? Right. We have a couple other witnesses who will testify on this as well, in case you need to hear it a couple times. But okay. Representative Scott.
I'm sorry if I lapped into technical issues.
Thank you. Just so I'm clear, excuse me, that what effect did this restructuring do to the formula, positive or negatively, when it first occurred?
When it first occurred, and there's a combination of things going on here, but I believe that Measure 50 set the permanent rate at a rate that was roughly equivalent, actually probably a little bit higher than most other school districts. And so our contributions to the system, I think, were pretty equivalent to what other school districts had to put in under Measure 50. The rest of the of those provisions go back to when the state school fund itself was created. And at that time, a special provision was created for the, I can't remember all the history of this, but somewhere in the midst of the state school fund, an exception was created for what's called the desegregation requirements on Portland Public Schools. And the purpose of that was essentially to give more money to Portland Public Schools. That was the purpose of the legislation, recognizing that they had a desegregation requirement that other school districts didn't have. And that, when that was created, it did in fact give more money to Portland Public Schools than other districts were getting. And what we would do under this is that when that legislation was passed, there was a sunset date put on it. And we would not come back and ask for that sunset date to be extended. So we would just allow that $8 million, which we currently keep, to go into the state school fund. So the net effect of that would be $8 million more into the state school fund. But that would reverse that special provision that was created in, I can't remember when that provision was created. I think it was pre-Measure 50 when that was. I don't know if Steve can remember that, but
it started in 97.
Okay, it started 2 years before Measure 50. So it would let that expire, go away, and put the $8 million back into the state school fund. So Measure 50 itself, I don't believe, created any or affected what Portland got more or less relative to other districts, except that it had to repay its gap bond. But I think the permanent rate was set so that it was really Portland taxpayers that were repaying that tax bond, because they were paying a rate above the 477 in order to repay the gap bond. So I don't believe it created any distortion at the time when Measure 50 was created. Whatever distortion was created when the DSEG allocation was passed 2 years before that. I don't know if that made any sense, but it's too much.
It brings up another question, but it won't be
long. Okay.
Okay. All right. Okay. Jim Scherzinger, thank you. You'll stick around in case we need to cycle you back. let's hear from Ozzy Rose. Ozzy, you were in the, got you on the list here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ozzy Rose of the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, and I represent the superintendent's group that messes with stuff, as you know. And we support what this bill does. We're also going to be working on some stuff on the other side related to small schools and timbers that we'll be bringing back to you. But we believe this is a thing you ought to go ahead and move ahead on. The issue with Portland, if they're 477, if you don't do this, and their authority runs out for the what they're paying off their PERS with, then they wind up having to pay that PERS off inside their existing operating, and we don't get anything out of that statewide. If they don't go out and vote something additional, and their local option, they voted additional, we don't get anything for the rest of the district. They pay it off, and it gets it out of the situation where on your front sheet that we are doing something special for Portland. And it also helps them because of interest rates and stuff, do a much better job with this debt that they have. And the PERS debt, no matter how people want to argue it, was a special situation that was set up for a variety of reasons. And you can argue that they should or shouldn't have done it, or they had to do it, excuse me. But whether they should or shouldn't have got treated this way in the formula, lots of people argue that both ways, but I think they have a very legitimate argument for what we did, and I think you ought to do this.
What about the 750% to 15%? Did you want to touch on that?
Yeah, we are supportive of doing that also. Okay. That's part of what makes this work.
Yeah.
But it also then applies to other school districts.
Right.
We're not supportive of the local option $2 above $5.
We know that.
Unless you take our suggestion that you set it up so you can levy it and you levy it statewide. And our reasoning why one is different than the other is going to expanding a little bit under the existing option clearly isn't an answer to our funding problem. the answer of trying to throw the $2 out and let some districts do it as a, quote, answer to what's going on right now is what bothers us about doing that. But this can't be sold. What you're doing here cannot be viewed as an answer to your current funding crisis. You still have to solve that. So that's the rationale for the difference. In those
and you mentioned things in the Senate. We've got...
You've got the timber argument. You've got the small school correction. And we've got a couple, three ideas we're working on over there that'll show up here later.
And in fact, the Senate's working on a 750 and 15%.
That bill's over there, yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So this there's is enough. The whole thing, but it's
right, yeah.
Part of...
I just want you to know there's some more stuff coming to make this...
Okay. Questions for Ozzie Rose? All right. Thank you very much. Jim, Matt. Is it you? Yeah, Matt Markey.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Matt Markey representing the Equity Steering Committee, which is comprised of seven school districts across the state. I'm here today testifying actually in opposition to House Bill 3449. While I understand Portland has some budget problems, so does other school districts across the state. While the refinancing of these PERS bonds probably is okay, particularly assuming that they don't continue to raise this money locally without a local option after 2 years, and I'm pleased to hear the commitment that they're not looking to extend the sunset date on their desegregation money. However, there is a sunset on their desegregation money in 2 years, so that would be an issue we'd be talking about anyway. We've been fighting for a long time this extra almost $40 million of biennium outside the formula with Portland Public School Districts. But our biggest concern with this bill is the increase in the caps on the local option. Currently, we're at $500 or 10%, and this would go to $750 or 15%. And
I was just trying to check off issues here. You're saying you're okay on what this does with respect to the permanent rate vis-a-vis the PERS and the GAP bonds.
Mr. Chair, yeah.
I mean the DSEG and the GAP bonds.
Mr. Chair, that's
okay.
Correct.
Okay, so we're talking about the 750 and the 15%
exactly.
On the local option.
Mr. Chair, that's our biggest concern.
Okay.
And our districts that we represent tend to be middler-sized districts, and they're very worried about the disparities in funding across the state. We've worked very hard since 1991 to try and reach equity, and we're very close now. You could probably say that we're there. However, when you start looking at increasing local option caps and you're looking at other business taxes and other communities to help fund schools, the disparity starts to grow again, and that's our biggest concern. There are several pieces of legislation that you've heard earlier that are in the Senate. Actually, Senate Bill 550 is on its way over here now, dealing with special transportation or special education and transportation. Now we're talking about looking at some more fixes for small schools. We're looking at federal forest fees, and I'm sure that the districts in Washington County would like some high growth factors. And the middle-sized school district doesn't get any of these. Doesn't receive any additional money for these things and instead just pays for it. And so they end up losing additional money while we're helping these other special needs, so to speak. So I guess what I'm here really today to ask is that we at least slow this bill down for now and look at this as a package so we can see how much it's costing certain districts, and rather than doing a piece-by-piece situation. We don't even know what our total K-12 budget's going to look like yet, and we all do know, however, that it's going to be substantially smaller probably than we'd like. And I understand that because of that, every district would like to try and send more money their way. But again, it's the middle-sized district that ends up paying for both the small schools and the bigger schools. So with that, I guess I would just like to say that it is our position that every child in the state has an equal opportunity to an education. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? I guess my question in terms of the middle-sized schools paying for this, I guess I understand that when you talk about the adjustments in the transportation portion of the formula and high growth. I'm not sure how I understand that applies to raising the cap.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. It probably doesn't apply to raising the cap. However, we still are opposed to raising the caps just because of the disparities that it brings among districts. There are lots of districts that don't have any money available to them in the gap between Measure 5 and Measure 50. There are other districts that, frankly, even though we have an equalization grant available to help pass local options, they'll just never be able to pass one. So we just feel that it's unfair that some districts, due to certain circumstances, are able to pass these sorts of things. It brings disparity, and we just like to see that every child in the state does have an equal opportunity.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger.
Thank you. Mr. Markey, how are you defining a middle-sized district? I'm not sure what that is exactly.
Who are you?
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger. I can tell you we do have one larger district than Lapine. The rest of them I would consider middle-sized. They would consist of Silverton, Woodburn, McMinnville, Newburg, Lincoln County, Central, out in Polk County. Relatively, 5,000 to 6,000 students.
Thank you.
Other comments? Questions? All right. Thank you, Matt. Ozzie?
Thank you, Matt. Mr.
Chair. Rebuttal? Yeah, come on up. Then we'll have Sir Rebuttal.
Again, for the record, Mr. Chairman, I'm Ozzie Rose, Confederation of Courts. Oregon School Administrators. And just to share with you how complex this is, the Silverton School District was mentioned by Mr. Markey. Silverton School District Superintendent is my chair and authorized me to share with you what I shared with you. This is a complex issue.
Thank you very much. All right. As I understand, Steve, there's some technical work that still needs to be done on the Dash 3s. Is that right?
I think there probably should be. If you look on page 5, that language in sub B, it is generic, and there are two other school districts that had gap bonds, and one of those may have had that rate converted into their permanent rate already. If that has happened, that language, I think, would exclude that additional revenue from the higher permanent rate from local revenue in the formula.
Jim, do you want to respond to that?
Jim Scherzinger again, Portland Public Schools. I believe that's true. I believe there were two others, and they had very low rates. Their rates were in the range of $3, if I remember. And so what may make some sense here is that in effect what you do is have this apply to districts whose rates were higher. I thought it interesting that when we've done this in other places where the rates were high, one of them was the Bend, where we set a statutory rate limit below the constitutional rate because of the way the calculation worked. The other was in Sweet Home. So that would be one way you could deal with that, would be to say that it applied in places in to situations where the current rate is high.
Okay. Sounds like we need Dash 4.
I also believe that the dollar amounts involved in both of those were pretty small.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Well, let's get Dash 4s. I'll tell you, it's my inclination, and I'll poll the committee, but it's still my inclination to move this bill. Number one, we do have the broader buy-in of COSA, which has a larger constituency, I think, and it does fix a couple of specific problems for Portland. And I'm sensitive to Mr. Markey's argument about equity, but I'm concerned also that equity sometimes, this gets back to the old notion that we're talking about a floor or a ceiling here, and I think it's not inappropriate, and I know the Senate is very interested in adjusting these statutory caps on the 750 and 15%, so we're going to see that again anyway, whether we do it or not. I mean, granted, this is not the comprehensive fix, but I think there are pieces in the Senate as well that will be more comprehensive when we put all of this together. And so it's going to come in pieces of legislation and not necessarily in one piece. I will check with the committee on this, though, and we'll get these Dash 4s back and schedule this for a work session, assuming that the committee is still interested in pursuing this. Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a comment, and I'm certainly willing to pursue this at the risk of not offending Portland. That helps all of us a great deal in a number of ways. I was glad to hear you say that we are going to put the pieces together. even though I'm a rather random thinker, I'm having a bit of difficulty keeping track of all the pieces, and I remember last session, it's always of interest when you get down and you pass something and then we do a run on how that impacts all the individual school districts. It's not always what it seems, so I'm eager for us to look at the big picture. The pieces make me nervous because I can't see the whole.
Okay, anything else? Representative Scott?
Thank you. I actually think that that's the approach that I'd like to see. I would like to see how the effect comes and what other of the little pieces that we have coming in, what it does. And I get nervous to do these in advance of seeing the other things that may be coming down to impact, you know, what effect that has.
Usually what we're concerned about is changes in the formula, and what everyone always looks to is the dollar amount in their particular school districts that they represent. In this case, the change in the formula is actually going to be money into the formula. So the only change in formula is to the good for statewide. So this isn't like what might be an adjustment in the transportation or special ed or other weightings where you're going to see the mix of things up and down. To the extent that this has a formula change, it's, what did I hear, 8 million, 9 million?
7.
7 million to the good. The rest of this is purely affecting Portland and nobody else. And I'm getting some nods back there confirming that I'm right. So in that respect.
Pardon? Starting in 05.
Starting in 05, yeah. Starting in 05, right. But there wouldn't be a change anyway. Even without this, you would still have there still wouldn't be a change.
Yeah.
I mean, in the current biennium, this isn't making any change in the current biennium or the 03-05 biennium. So,
hopefully with the dash four.
Yeah. That makes this a little bit different flavor than some other pieces of adjusting the elements of the formula discreetly, because those do create winners and losers. And then when you pass the third one, you pass the second one, you pass the third one independently. They all mix everything up, and you can't tell what you were trying to accomplish with the first two. But in this case, again, the only effect on the formula for all of the other schools statewide is that their formula distribution will increase according to their share of that $7 million that would go back into the formula that Portland's getting right now. Jim, you want to speak one more time on that?
Jim Scherzinger, Portland Public Schools. I just wanted to clarify that because we did pass out those sheets that said that Portland could get more money out of this. The only way we really get more money out is if we use our local option authority and the voters approve it. So,
and that doesn't affect statewide.
And that doesn't affect the, right. At least that's the way that the 05-06 thinks. Now, the thing is about refinancing, we can push the money around one way or the other in order to get our accrual taken care of, but that's the way we get more money. So it's not affecting the other districts.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. We'll look for dash fours. Committee, you'll be hearing from me in the meantime, but I'd like to see this back. So with that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 29, I'm sorry, 3449. And we've got a little theme here. Well, actually, let's do 44 first, I guess, then, and then we'll get to our veterans bills. Open a public hearing on HJR 44. I don't have the sign-up sheet. Is there anybody here signed up for that? And I see we've got an identical, or at least something very close to this, coming up on tomorrow.
Yeah, it's Representative Markley. He's not here.
Okay, well, let me tap it in just as long as it's on the agenda. Open a public hearing on House Joint Resolution 44. Seeing no witnesses to testify, we will close the public hearing on HJR 44. And that brings us then to our veterans theme for the rest of the morning. And, Elizabeth, are those your bills, too?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So we'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 2902. Please.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, for the record, I'm Elizabeth Martin-Mahar with the Legislative Revenue Office.
with House Bill 2902. This is a tax credit bill, and what it's doing is provides a tax credit for individuals or corporations who provide full-time residential care to a disabled veteran who has family income which is less than the federal poverty guidelines. It specifies that the credit equals $2,500 per disabled veteran served by the taxpayer. So it allows prorating of the credit for the number of months that the disabled veteran does not receive care from that particular taxpayer. And it requires the credit to not exceed the amount of the taxpayer's liability and cannot be carried forward. It applies to residential care provided to disabled veterans in tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2004. Okay.
This sounds familiar. Did we look at this last session?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know. I wasn't in personal income taxes. I'm sorry, I don't remember.
Maybe some more witnesses can tell us. We have signed up for this Greg Warnick and Walter Cruz. I'm going to bring you gentlemen up. Yes, 2902. Oh, okay. Well, sit down. That's okay. Whoever wants to go first.
Chairman Shetterly and distinguished members of the committee, my name is Greg Warnock. I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Veterans Association. It is with great pleasure that I give testimony on the bill before us and the two other bills that you will consider today. Oregon Veterans Association is a war veterans membership organization whose charitable purposes include seeking out ways to help veteran members of the United States military. Several months ago, OVA and its Political Action Committee sent questionnaires to candidates and legislators asking them if they would support six agenda items during this legislative session. The bipartisan response was tremendously supportive. The three bills we consider today that received such impressive support were developed after many hours of discussion with veterans and families of veterans. While there are many, many issues that concern the lives and well-being of our war heroes, we selected six agenda items to bring to this legislature. As we consider the bills before us, let us remember that the heroic young men and women that we've seen on TV in the last few days look exactly like our war veterans of previous conflicts. American soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines serve with valor, bravery, self-sacrifice, and honor. Let us remember that the very freedom to sit here today to participate in this legislative process was purchased with the blood of heroic, sacrificial citizens. Their sacrifices and the sacrifices of their families have purchased the endowments of our Creator, penned by the Founding Fathers. And today we live in a society with freedoms never known in the history of the world. Let us never forget, however, that our liberties were endowed by the Creator, but purchased with the blood of American military personnel. While Oregon has more war veterans per capita than any other state in the Union, it has a reputation of not being supportive of its vets. The veterans in this room today, we were hoping for more but got the word out a little bit late, are asking you to change this reputation by carefully considering the bills before us. House Bill 2902 creates a tax credit for residential care facilities, as you know, that agree to house a disabled military veteran. The purpose of this bill is to help provide better care for disabled veterans than they are currently receiving by providing an incentive to taxpaying residential care facilities. We hope that this tax credit will incent a provider to choose to care for a low-income vet instead of choosing another resident based on their ability to pay a higher fee for services. Many disabled vets, especially those with service-related disabilities, have not had the ability to earn higher wages through their life or save large sums of money to be used for care. This places disabled veterans in an extreme disadvantage when they have to compete for residential care or services. Issues that cause concern for all people who need full-time residential care are quality of managed care, increasing costs of care, and some statistics show 300 to 500% increase per year. Numerous choices of types of care, changes in Medicaid and social services, losing your bed in the facility when hospitalized, even for a short period of time, and effect on families' financial resources. For disabled veterans, though, additional concerns are competition for beds, fear of receiving lesser care due to the inability to accommodate the rising cost of care, lack of compassion for veterans with more difficult to manage disabilities caused by war-related injuries, amputations, scars, burns, mental disorders, etc., and fear of being moved away from supporting family members due to the lack of local affordable care facilities. The disadvantages to disabled veterans are huge. Rather than asking the state to consider other costly solutions to these critical veterans' issues, it is our opinion that a tax credit incentive will help alleviate the financial burden of private sector providers. We believe that a tax credit of $2,500 per veteran per year, while it doesn't cover the cost at all of services provided, will provide sufficient motivation to excellent care facilities who want to help vets but find it difficult to choose a lower income disabled veteran instead of a more wealthy potential resident. We know that the state is suffering a budget crisis, but this bill remains a high priority for us. We ask that you temper the urgency of other budget issues with an understanding of the desperate needs of our most valued heroic citizens. The directors, advisors, and war veteran members of Oregon Veterans Association ask that you recommend passing this bipartisan supported bill for the reasons stated, as well as for making a positive statement to Oregon's military veterans about their value to our country, state, and communities. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Warnock. Any questions? We'll come back, maybe pick up questions to the panel. Who wants to go next?
Mr. Chairman, members of the panel, my name is Walter Cruz. I'm the legislative representative for the Non-Commissioned Officers Association here in the state of Oregon. And basically, I just want to register our support of these bills.
All right. Thank you very much.
Representative Charlie, other representatives here. My name is Dennis Hoyman. I wasn't going to speak today, but this House Bill 2902 brought back some fond memories of a veteran that I took care of a couple of years ago. His name was Petty Officer Herbert Morgan. He was 82 years old, and he would have gone into a facility for care if it was provided for him. He grew up in the era of the Depression, went through that, joined the Navy, went into the Navy, served well, was disabled, got out of the military. But in his waning years, he was alone, and he lived out in Tillamook. And there's no VA facilities out there. There was no care available for him, and he did not have the money to go ahead and get into a home. His income was $750 a month. He was what they call the notch babies. This House Bill 2902 would go ahead and offer or make facilities available to people of this age and in remote areas. But I remember him fondly, and I was thinking of him today when I read this bill. He would have been alive today if this bill would have been here and made it available, care for him. He ended up committing suicide about a year ago because he couldn't handle it anymore. I went up every week or every 2 weeks. I went up and stayed with him for 3 days. He needed inpatient care, but I couldn't provide that. I would stay with him for 3 days, do his laundry, make his meals, put him in a refrigerator for him so he could heat his meals back up and have something to eat, because he was not able to care for himself totally, and he had no family. I was the only family he really had. But he had nowhere else to go. The sad part is one time I was 1 day late from my scheduled visit to take care of him, and he just wrote a note, says he couldn't handle the pain anymore, and get himself in. But if he would have had a facility available for him in a local area, he would have done it. He had considered going to a veteran's home in the Dells, but he did not want to leave his home and all of his friends. I just wanted to personalize that bill a little bit, and that's for House Bill 2902, and I'm in support of that particular bill.
Well, thank you very much. Questions for any of these gentlemen? I guess Representative Virgil, go ahead.
I don't have a question. I just have a comment. Thank you so much. That's a very touching story. And it's not by itself. The veterans in my area don't have a home close by. The closest one is Roseburg. And Highway 42 is not the most comfortable ride if you're not feeling very well. Right. And I will say that they have tried to get closer conditions. But we have a number of veterans that are having to be cared for in homes. And many of them do outlive their own families. And so I want to just thank you for that story, because I think you have put a human face on a real need, whether a tax credit is the answer totally for that need. Another thing I'd just like to comment on is the fact that the assistance that the veterans get in Roseburg from our area are other veterans. Many of the people that go back and forth and take books to read and candy and a little cheer are the veterans themselves. And I think that we need to recognize that.
Thank you, Representative Parker.
Yeah, thank you. I guess my question was, do you recall, did we look at this last session? I know it has the flavor of something we looked at.
Chairman Shetterly, no.
Okay.
This is a brand
new.
Yeah.
Okay. And Elizabeth, you've not had a chance to do a revenue impact on this?
Mr. Chairman, no.
Okay. All right. Well, let me close the public hearing, unless anybody else wishes to testify. Stay right there, if you would. I think you're going to testify on 2903, I assume, too, and probably 2953. Are you all signed up? Do you want to stay up there, too?
I might as well. I have seen these bills, and I do support them.
Okay. Let me close the public hearing on 2902, then, and open a public hearing on House Bill 2903. Elizabeth.
Mr. Chairman, with 2903, this establishes a tax credit for a war veteran who pays for long-term care insurance. It specifies that the credit is equal to the lesser of 15% of the total amount of the long-term care insurance premiums paid, or $400. It clarifies that this new credit is in addition to any other credits a war veteran may qualify for. It requires the credit to not exceed the amount of the taxpayer's liability and cannot be carried forward. It applies to long-term care insurance premiums paid on or incurred in tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2004.
All right. Mr. Warnock, you're probably the lead-off on this one as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Currently, a person who purchases a long-term care policy receives an Oregon tax credit of $200. And we're asking that you consider raising that tax credit for veterans to $400. And the reason behind our requests are military veterans are more likely to require long-term care of some kind at a younger age than members of the rest of our population. And this is caused by living and working in a hostile environment that may contain unusual exposure to chemicals, agents, weapons, and other environmental hazards. Every year, new cancers and diseases are being attributed to the hostile environments, attributed to regions of warfare. And many of these things sneak up on younger veterans and afflict them at a relatively young age. The relative annual costs of long-term care insurance are low, especially for currently healthy young veterans. For example, it may only cost $600 a year for a 40-year-old. $2,000 per year for a 65-year-old. And, of course, those rates vary both high and low, depending on variables. The long-term care burden on the state Medicaid system and other health services providers can be substantially mitigated by a veteran purchasing a long-term care policy, especially if classified as disabled early in life. A veteran's estate can be preserved when a long-term care policy is used to cover the high costs of disability-related care which may reduce the state's need to provide other social services to the families of veterans who are disabled. And a special tax credit for veterans will not only save the state money in the long term, but through this incentive will help families of vets better deal with possible disabilities, but it will also demonstrate a special appreciation by setting vets apart from the rest of the population. This tax credit will honor veterans for their service. We feel that House Bill 2903 is a creative, low-cost solution and an alternative to other programs that could be funded to assist veterans in meeting their unique needs. Thank you for the consideration of this bill.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Warnock. Mr. Cruz?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Walter Cruz. I'm the Oregon Legislative Representative for the Non-Commissioned Officers Association. Again, we strongly support this bill and request that it go forward with a do-pass recommendation.
Thank you.
Representative Shetterly, other representatives. My name again is Dennis Hoyman. Relating this bill, I can relate it back to my petty officer, Herbert Morgan. Most of his money that he did spend was on insurance policies. The one thing I did forget to say, over his term in life, the way he judged his life is how much money he had left. He could no longer work. He had $10,000 in the bank, and he calculated out to the day what day he was going to die on. And most of his money was spent on medications and insurance policies. Again, I'm in support of one of these bills here.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments? I think our comments probably are the same as to these, as what Representative Verger spoke on the previous bill. Does anybody else wish to address these? All right, thank you. Does anybody else want to testify? We've got a whole room full now. Anybody want to come up and testify on House Bill 2903? Just kidding. All right, thank you very much. We close the public hearing then on House Bill. Oh, I'm sorry again, Elizabeth, we've not got a revenue impact on this. Okay. So we need to take a look at that. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2903. Representative Merkley and Representative Gallegos, are you here together on the same bill? Are you here on 44? You're late, but we'll do that in a minute. Let me open a public hearing on House Bill 2953. And if you could make room for Representative Gallegos, let's bring her forward as Lisbeth is giving us the staff overview.
House Bill 2953, this requires the Oregon Veterans Home to be included on the front page of the personal income tax form so Oregonians can make charitable contributions to this home. It specifies that the Department of Revenue place space for Oregonians to contribute to the Oregon Veterans Home through their income tax refund. It applies to tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2004. Now, this really is kind of opens up the bigger issue of charitable checkoffs, and I'll just go through a little bit of background on that issue. Under current law, Oregonians can donate all or a part of their tax refund to designated charities. In 2001 tax year, I've given you the statistics for that particular year, as well as the Department of Revenue has a really good summary sheet here that you have from 1991 all the way to 2002, which is preliminary data. But basically, what we've been seeing is that this charitable contribution total has been growing, as well as the number of people contributing. So in tax year 2001, we had 107,260 Oregonians donating $670 in total checkoff contributions to in 2001, you had 13 charitable contributions. The program is basically administered by the Oregon Charitable Checkoff Commission, and on the front page right now, currently under state law, we are allowed five different charitable organizations. That's the Oregon non-game wildlife, Alzheimer's disease research, and child abuse prevention, stop domestic and sexual violence, and AIDS education and services are all five on the front page now. And this bill would be adding the Oregon Veterans Home onto the front page.
On the form.
On the form, that's right. Now, last session, what you had also in 2002, you had a bill which basically enacted, which placed the Oregon Veterans Home in the tax instruction booklet. So they're currently in the tax instruction booklet, but not on the front page. And so basically you have, as we see listed, five on the front page, but then you have another group. And right now in 2002, you have a total of 17. So you have 14 then, or 12, that are listed in the instructions. So you have not only the ones that are on the front page, but then you have in the instructions additional charities. And there's a rotation on those charities that are in the instruction booklet. The Department of Revenue is here, too, also to talk about any questions you may have on just a rotation and the whole aspect of the charities that get
rotation
selected.
In terms of who gets
who
listed
gets in
first.
The Yeah, and who gets in the instruction booklet. Mm-hmm. You are listed in the instruction booklet for 6 years, and then you have to reapply. But the Department of Revenue can go into more detail about that. But these numbers really do help you see how much we have had quite a few changes. Up until 1999, there were only five charities that were listed. And then in 2000, we started expanding that and adding more into the instructions.
Okay. So for committee, again, if you've not done this before, this is one of these kind of biennial issues, the charitable checkoff. You've got, which always strikes me, it sounds like
a Russian poet
with a, yeah, with a philanthropic bent. But you have the...
But you have a brother on a Star Trek.
Sign it up.
On the Star Trek.
You have these charitable organizations that are on the tax form itself, right on the form, and then inside the book, there's a blank on the form, right? Because then if you want to go inside the booklet, in the instruction booklet, you can pick out from one of the kind of the second tier, I guess you'd have to say it, the groups that are in the booklet, and you can list them on the form and then check them off.
Yeah, they've each got a number associated with them in the booklet, and then you can put that number, which would correspond to that charity you want to contribute, in the other charity category.
And this one, Oregon Veterans Home, I see, got in for 2002.
Correct. You did that in 2001.
Right, and there were 55 contributors and generated $974.
That's right.
Okay.
And just so just so you're clear, that is 2002 preliminary numbers.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's as of March 7th, 2003.
Committee, I'll pass this down. We've all seen this on the tax forms, but it's useful since we're talking about this. You can see how this actually appears, where the charities are. Oh, we've got copies? Oh, thank you, John. Where the charities are listed, and then you have the other choice. It's on the back of the form for those of you who are getting it now. All right, Representative Gallegos.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good morning.
Colleagues, my name's Mary Gallegos, Representative for House District 29. And before you, to introduce House Bill 2953, which I was pleased to introduce on behalf of the Veterans, Oregon Veterans Association, and your fine staff has clearly given you all the background that you need, and really the issue is would like to see the veterans check off on the actual front sheet, because there seems to be clearly an advantage to having yourself on the front as opposed to in the back. And I'm here to just encourage your support of veterans, and clearly we have a huge number of veterans in Oregon. Greg, who will speak shortly, can give you those exact figures, but obviously the state of world affairs today, we have a growing number of veterans that will return to Oregon, and it's very timely for us to think about them and their future well-being. And I think putting this on the front page will put them at an advantage without trying to disadvantage anybody who's already there. and show that we support veterans. So that's really all I have.
Okay. For the record, this is the Oregon Veterans Home that we had on the floor last month, or earlier. This would have been last month, I guess, authorizing general fund appropriation. Not making a general fund appropriation, but authorizing anyway the Oregon Veterans Home to receive general fund.
The same veterans. So,
yes, this is that. This is that institution.
Yes, correct.
Okay. Mr. Warnock. Oh, I'm sorry. Any questions for Representative Gallegos? All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Warnock.
Oregon Veterans Association decided to choose this issue as one of the most important issues that we've brought to the legislature this year. A little bit of background with regard to Oregon Veterans Home. It is a unique facility that has efficiently operated since its inception on the pensions of its residents and the generous contributions of charitable donors. Veteran service groups, individuals, communities, and businesses have all played a part in keeping the home open to serve the specific and unique needs of military veterans. The home has been subsidizing the operating costs, medical care, and facility repairs with a trust fund that was established for charitable contributions. The principal fund, however, is being depleted more quickly than anticipated due to the rising cost of health care and the low rate of return on investments. In fact, that is likely to be depleted, completely depleted next biennium. During the last regular session, the legislature approved Oregon Veterans Home as a charitable checkoff with an assigned code that is placed in the other box on the form. It is our opinion that the people who are more likely to contribute part of their tax return as a charitable contribution are also less likely to search for a code and discover the correct procedures for contributing. Oregon Veterans Home is an extremely important asset to the state and to its veterans. We believe that the home would be better served and that veterans would receive better recognition if Oregon Veterans Home is actually placed on the form itself as a permanent option. The legislature is likely to approve another bill this year, which the chairman related to earlier, which allows for the first time access to general funds if needed to operate the home. We believe that if the general public is made more aware of Oregon Veterans Home as a charitable check-off option, the need for general funds would be diminished because the home would receive more funds from charitable contributors. This is a bill that helps interested donors reduce the cost of the state needing to pay for expenses relating to the home. The fiscal impact is positive, and the effect of recognizing veterans as a vital part of our society are excellent reasons for passing this bill. Thank you.
All right. Question for Mr. Warnock.
If I might add, we do have a representative from Oregon Veterans Home that can answer some specific questions, or from ODVA.
Yeah, and actually, that would be Paula Brown?
Yes.
Yeah, she's signed up. Mr. Cruz, do you want to speak?
For the record, my name is Walter Cruz. I'm the Oregon Legislative Representative for the Noncommissioned Officers Association. In addition, I'm the current chairman for the United Veterans Groups of Oregon. This is an umbrella type organization with 12 voting members from the major veterans organizations. UVGO is the organization that got the Veterans Home built to begin with. They fought many years for this. And any way we can help to finance that operation, and we dearly need the financing, we want to help. And I am strongly recommending this bill be passed with a do-pass recommendation.
All right. Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Cruz? All right. Mr. Wayman, you're back.
Representative Shirley, other members. Again, I'm going to put a pace to this bill. This time it's mine.
Oh.
When I was a kid growing up, before I joined the military, I joined the United States Marine Corps in 1965. in Wisconsin, where I came from originally, we had a veterans home there. It was called the King Home for Veterans. And veterans back there are very well treated, and that home was very well funded. That was one of my decisions, believe it or not, going into the military, knowing if I ever got wounded or I ever got hurt in the military, I'd have a place to go. It's some place that would go ahead and take care of my needs. And that was the King Home. In Oregon, we have the Oregon Veterans Home out there, but this state is not funding it. And by putting this on the ballot and putting this up front, we're going to be recognized. These veterans, when we're needed in a time of war, we're very prominent, and people look forward to us. Boy, we're the greatest thing going when that war is going on. As soon as we turn around and come home, we're forgotten. And that's about the way it is on this tax bill here. Where are we? We're on the tax bill, but we're just way back in the background somewhere. We should be up front to be recognized for what we have put forth in the past. And I support this thing here, and I think that veterans should be put up front as far as a contribution to our home that's going to take care of veterans when they come home and they need that care.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wayman. Questions for Mr. Wayman? All right, thank you. Ms. Brown, a new face this morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Paula Brown. I'm the Public Information Manager for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I'd like to mention that Starl Austin, the chairman of the Veterans Affairs Advisory Committee to the governor, is here in the audience today. Additionally, the Veterans Affairs Advisory Committee to the governor supports House Bill 2953, and I'm here to testify in support of the bill. The department is very happy whenever the Oregon Veterans Home whenever interest is shown in the Oregon Veterans Home. As I'm sure you're aware, you've heard and probably already knew, the Oregon Veterans Home receives no general fund dollars. As you also know, last session, Representative Merkley introduced legislation to allow the department to pursue application to the Oregon Charitable Checkoff Commission to be included in the tax instruction booklet. We were very pleased with that. We're very thankful that Representative Gallego introduced House Bill 2953. We're pleased that the home is listed in the tax instruction booklet. This is the first year that the home has been listed in the booklet. As of last month, I think you may have had some figures. There were nearly $1,000 that had been donated to the Oregon Veterans Home. These are dollars that came from Oregonians that decided to share a portion of their tax refund with the Oregon Veterans Home. And, of course, these dollars are especially important since the home does receive no general fund dollars. It won't take a lot of your time. I guess what I would say is that if the committee believes that the position of the home would be enhanced by the home actually being listed on the tax form rather than in the instruction booklet, we would be very pleased if you were to pass this bill. We're certainly in support of it and appreciate your time, appreciate your taking the opportunity, the time to hear the bill and to care about veterans in the state of Oregon. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Ms. Brown, I guess your testimony does recall and bring to mind one thing. I was trying to remember why it took legislation to get the veterans home in the book, because that's all done by a rule. Mm-hmm. But that was because the rule requires that an organization be a 501c3, isn't it? And the
that's
veterans
correct.
Home is not a 501c3 organization, so we took a special bill to get them in the book. Is that what it was?
I believe that is correct. Yes. Department of Revenue may be able to answer that.
I'm getting nods of the head from the department and Representative Merkley, who's joined us on another bill. Okay, questions for any of these then?
Mr. Chair, if I could add, in order for the home to be listed in the booklet, you know, we were required to collect the 10,000 signatures.
Right.
There were over 14,000
right.
signatures collected. So there was a huge amount of support from the Veterans Service Organizations and Oregonians to make that happen.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you all. I have a question either for John Phillips or Elizabeth, if either one of you can answer. Looking at the checkoff history here, Oh, for instance, you take a look at the top five. You've gone from numbers over $100,000, and in 2002, significant drop-off on that. What's that all about?
Mr. Chairman, this is preliminary numbers, right? This doesn't include, like, the, you know, April filing.
Okay, so this is not a projection.
Yes, no, not at all.
This is collected
just
2 days.
Okay. Really doesn't represent a whole year at all.
Okay, fine. So those 2002 doesn't mean much of anything to
us
then.
Correct. It just helps you see, at least for the veterans' homes, since this was the first year, that this is how much they've collected so far.
Okay, very good.
Early filers.
Early filers,
yeah.
Sorry.
All right, questions for either of these. John Phillips, did you want to say anything about the...
Yeah, he's...
You've got... Okay, come on up. Only if we have questions. Does anybody have questions about the charitable checkoff program generally for Mr. Phillips? Okay. Thanks. I guess with that, then, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill... I always forget as we go through.
29.
Thank you, 2953. And thank everybody for their testimony on that. Let's go back and reopen the public hearing on HJR 44. Representative Merkley has joined us. Is this a visiting school group? Where are you from?
Pleasant Hill.
Pleasant Hill. Welcome. Glad to have you. Take us through Measure 44.
With HJR 44, it amends the Oregon Constitution and it restricts the legislature from enacting any new personal income or corporate excise tax credits unless at least one of the following provisions is included in the legislation, limiting the credit to 6 years or less, not including carry forwards of unused credits, limiting the revenue impact of the tax credit, or limiting the biennium revenue impact of the tax credit. If the legislature fails to establish a biennial revenue impact or fails to limit that or renew the new limitation, then the tax credit is eliminated, and then it amends the Constitution and shall be referred to voters at the next regular general election, which would be November of 2004.
All right, Mr. Merkley,
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Representative Jeff Merkley from East Portland. Thank you for hearing this bill. I asked for this to be prepared to contribute to the conversation about tax expenditures and tax credits. A piece of what we're struggling with in this legislative session and in the special sessions last year is finding the appropriate places to save money. But many of the programs we pay for in this state are tied up in tax credits rather than going through the normal ways and means process. This is an effort to say we need to find a way to get a handle on our tax credits, and one way to handle them would be not to have them. That would be rather extreme and unlikely. Another way would be to provide ways to regularly review them. And so this constitutional amendment would say simply that at a minimum, each tax credit would be removed, reviewed when its sunset came up, and that's limited to the duration of 6 years or less. And the other way to approach it would be something as we do with the IDA's tax credit, the Individual Development Account tax credits, where we put a limit on the amount dispersed. That's a very complicated way to handle a tax credit. It's part of the challenge. In the IDA legislation, it says there's a spending ceiling, and as the ceiling gets close, then additional tax credits are simply revoked. So it's kind of first come, first serve on the IDA strategy. So I don't need to take up a lot of the committee's time to address this. I simply wanted to throw another idea into the mix of how do we get a handle on the overall state budget, both the expenditure and revenue side, with tax credits playing into both.
Right, thank you. Questions for Representative Merkley? That's interesting. I think that the tax expenditure report itself, having that booklet, I think over the last past two or three sessions, I think we just started it in 97 or 99, really has begun to focus the very kind of questions and issues you've raised, even in this measure. People are very conscious of the tax expenditures as being a corollary in very many respects, to appropriations in the Ways and Means process.
It's true. That book has helped enormously.
All right. Thank you. Anyone from Pleasant Hill wish to testify on HJR 44? Too bad.
This one was so exciting.
That's right. You're not going to find one that's more exciting than this. Good luck. All right. We'll close the public hearing on HJR 44. Committee, please note tomorrow we have a start time of 8:30. The floor, if you recall, we have a regular floor session on Fridays now. And so we will start at our regular 8:30 time. You'll see on the agenda tomorrow we have six bills up for hearing. And then several bills after that for tap-tap. The tap-tap, of course, will take about 5 minutes to get through at the most. But we do have other bills that I'm anticipating a full morning tomorrow. I'd like to get started at 8:30, so please make sure that you are here then and not wandering on the floor wondering where the quorum is. With that, we are adjourned.
What time?